Well, hello and welcome to the Smells Like Money podcast. Join me, Suzanne Chin Taylor, the doo-doo diva, as I interview guests who are making an impact on how we manage and operate systems for conveying and treating wastewater. As a veteran of the wastewater, trenchless, and civil infrastructure industry, each week I'll be bringing you industry know-how from industry pros who know how. Join me each week as I speak with representatives of organizations that are utilizing disruptive or new technologies and methods, and executives who are excited to share how to be successful and sustainable in our vital industry. So whether you want to learn about the latest trends in technology, in treatment or trenchless, gain tips on training and retaining great talent, or simply how to be more efficient, productive, or profitable, this podcast is for you. Ready? Let's dive right in. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Doo-Doo Divas Smells Like Money podcast. Today, we are visiting with Brad Myers, who is the Chief Operating Officer of 374 Water. And that's the number 374. And that's what intrigued me to ask him to come on to the show today. So welcome, Brad.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Brad, before we even kick off and dive into what is it, what does the name 37 Water stand for? How did you come up? I know the story behind this, but other people that may be listening that have never heard of this may be completely unfamiliar with the significance of this number. So for their benefit, tell us how the company got its name and why this has become such an integral part of the brand.
Sure. 374 actually means 374 degrees centigrade. Okay. Which is the temperature at which that water becomes supercritical. So our process is air supercritical water oxidation, which starts to happen at 374 degrees C. So hence the name. And basically that turns water into a supercritical fluid, which acts as an oxidant that will destroy virtually any organic compound. So our name originates from the process temperature at which we can start to operate.
All right, so let's dive right into that. What is meant by supercritical?
So, we're traditionally when we go to school, we think of matter having three states: liquid, solid, gas. And supercritical liquids are essentially a fourth state, somewhere between liquid and gas. So, the process conditions are high temperature and high pressure, and water will not boil under significant pressure. So you provide enough pressure so that the water can't boil off or flash off, and you continue to heat it. And when you get above 374 C, it turns into this really kind of interesting and unique material that acts as an oxidant and essentially will dissolve, for lack of a better description, all types of organic compounds. So our process, we typically operate in the high 550 to 600 C range. And at different temperatures, you have better or worse effectiveness at obliterating different types of organic compounds. To some extent, the closer to 600 for our process, the better, especially as it relates to some of the more difficult chemicals like PFAS and things like that. We want to be closer to 600 degrees C.
Okay, so let's talk about this and how this actually can be applied in wastewater treatment. Where does it enter into the process flow or stages of typical treatment? And we'll start there. I've got a couple other questions. I mean, my head's just spinning right now, but let's just start there as to how is it used and where?
Sure. So there's a couple of unique things when you apply it specifically to biosolids or the wastewater industry. And that is that essentially we actually use the biosolids as the fuel for the reaction. So for us, we want a concentration up to a certain level so that we have enough fuel so that the reaction is essentially self-sustaining without having to put energy input into it. So that kind of, we look for about a 15% solids content in the material. So this would typically be some type of digested, either anaerobically or aerobically, and then it could be a 2% stream, a 6% stream. It depends on what the plant's producing. And then we would dewater that stream in a pretreatment system, and then we would basically provide it to our treatment system, the AirSCWO unit, which would process it at somewhere around that 15% solids, which gives us just enough energy coming from the poop to essentially sustain the reaction. So as long as we're in doo-doo diva, I guess it's doo-doo that is providing the energy in this case. So we actually use the organic material in the biosolids as our fuel, and then the water becomes the oxidant that actually dissolves that. And it's an exothermic reaction.
So is this solving the typical, you know, they're the same old issues. There's just different ways to, I guess, building the better mousetrap. What's the advantage over this? How can it help or maybe improve or solve an already existing pain point that we've got in wastewater treatment? You know, there's so many ways that you can go about this. Why would an agency or treatment plant be looking to augment or utilize this approach?
That's a great question, and it opens Pandora's box, because as you know, the marketplace is very diverse. So there's a number of reasons, but let's start from one basic premise. We're not treating or stabilizing, we're obliterating. It's gone, never to return. So what comes in is a 15% biosolid stream. What comes out is basically clean water and inert minerals, which the inert minerals may or may not have value depending on what that is, but there's no issue with discharge or treatment. There's no post-treatment required. So biosolids come in and they don't come out, just water comes out. So when you start thinking about plants, for example, that are dewatering their sludge to get discharge that is clean enough to go out, so they've digested it, they've dewatered it, now they've got to transport it. And they're transporting it in some cases hundreds of miles, maybe to land apply, maybe to go to a landfill. There's a whole cost stream associated with the transport, with the handling, with the dewatering, with the land application and or the landfill. That all goes away. Now, when you compound that with the fact that virtually all biosolids in the Western world are contaminated with these forever chemicals, whether it's PFOA or PFOS, but either way, they're not getting rid of those. So what's happening at this point is whatever is being land applied, whatever is going to a landfill, wherever it is going, those chemicals are going with it. The tremendous advantage that you get when you have this type of treatment, and there are very few in the marketplace that can do this at any type of scale. So when you look at an AirSCWO system, and our smallest system basically will do a 1 MGD plant, right, which is not significant. It's great for small locations that don't have the anybody else's infrastructure, but it's eminently scalable to a 5 MGD plant, to a 30 MGD plant. So there's all type of options that come with this. But the key thing is biosolids come in and water comes out the other end. And that organic, as well as any basically organically derived contaminants, so all of these forever chemicals are included in that, is destroyed in the process.
Okay. So I know one of the big questions is going to come up. Well, is this going to be something that's going to replace something I'm already doing? Or is it going to be a bolt on to my existing process? And then the big thing, is this going to, I guess, be able to help me increase capacity, improve compliance? You know, all those things that wastewater treatment plant operators are thinking of is that, yeah, I'm going to do this, but what's it going to look like on the footprint? And what's going to be the payoff? I know the clean water comes at the end. We're getting rid of maybe that dealing with the biosolids and the sludge, the sludge hauling. So actually, you know, sludge expenses. The fact that it runs off of built-in, what you were saying, the poop, the doo-doo, as it's I guess I'm playing devil's advocate here is that what's it going to mean to a plant operator to add something like this beyond some of those things that you already stated? What does it take to bring something like this online?
So it really depends on the plant, right? So there's plants that have a known, let's say, high concentration of PFAS in a certain portion of their biosolids. It might be even a municipality that has multiple plants and they know they've got a more significant problem in one plant than the other. We all know that the sort of regulatory aspect of this right now is a little bit of limbo, but we know it's coming. So there's preparation for the future. There's the ability to deal with the actual difficulty associated with that stream. But here's the big thing. You can bolt it on essentially at different places in the plant, as long as you can concentrate it. That's what, that's the one key thing. You've got to concentrate it to get above, you know, 10, 12, 15%. Otherwise the economics don't work for you. But now it goes beyond that too, because if you start scaling up to our 30 wet ton unit or a 200 wet ton unit, now you're massively energy positive. So if you're using heat or steam in your plant, which most of these plants do, you can simply recover that on a direct basis. You could also take that and you could use it to generate electricity. So there's a multitude of places where this fits. And you asked about new infrastructure versus existing infrastructure. And, you know, we see this in a lot of different places. We see this as a bolt-on to existing infrastructure to begin mitigating some of the sludge handling costs, for example. And that would be based on where you are geographically. There's certain known geographies where the sludge handling costs are just, you know, they're off the charts, basically, right? So it's sort of an immediate solution to go into those areas. There's other areas, and depending on what regulatory agency and what state you're in, that are more or less aggressive on starting to deal with these forever chemicals. So there's the other piece of it. Okay, you can bolt this in as part of it. Now you have a whole other side where, as new infrastructure comes online, does new infrastructure begin to build around an AirSCWO system rather than as a bolt-on system? So if you've got, you know, you look at the CapEx costs for a 5 MGD plant and traditional treatment, and you start integrating SCWO into it, and you don't have the downline sludge handling costs, you have eliminated the forever chemicals. There's a lot of places where we fit. It's an emerging technology. SCWO has been around for a really long time. Our particular sort of secret sauce or bent on it with the AirSCWO system is relatively new. Being able to do this on a continuous basis at scale in a CapEx level that would work for biosolids, that has a lot to do with the changes in technology and advancements that have happened over the last, you know, 20 or 30 years since SCWO has been introduced. It was traditionally, you know, something for chemical weapons, for biologicals, for all very, very difficult to handle. So as we, you know, continue to integrate this technology and our specific brand of it, the AirSCWO technology, which lowers the CapEx investment, improves the throughput, improves some efficiencies, this starts to spread out to more and more segments of the market. And time's going to tell. I mean, we've got interest and you know, things cooking basically with everything from TSDF hazmat facilities, right, where you're talking about treating completely non-biosolid material at all, where it's, you know, concentrated AFFF or other PFAS waste streams. You've got pharma, which is, you know, not traditionally the doo-doo diva side of life, right, but basically it's wastewater treatment. And then of course you've got the whole, biosolids industry, which is really in a very difficult position right now. You've got a lot of aging infrastructure. You've got a lot of changing regulatory requirements. You've got a known problem that continues to go. And there aren't many newer technologies coming in. And you got to keep in mind, we're not stabilizing. We're not changing state. We are eliminating. And that's our single biggest advantage when you look at it in the biosolid side of it. So at whatever scale is appropriate for a particular municipality or facility to integrate this, that waste stream's gone. It's dischargeable water at the end of it. And you start thinking about that and all the ramifications as fuel costs continue to rise, as electricity costs continue to rise, this process starts to get more and more attractive in a wider and wider range of facilities.
Because there's been a lot of controversy. I've been having some conversations with folks about the topic of dewatering. And on the surface, it looked like, oh, this could be the holy grail. This could be, you know, great. But there's a lot of mixed views on this now because of the expenses and all of the other things that you were saying that are attached to this, that is it actually the great answer that we were all looking for? And another big thing on the hot, you know, hot topic is water reclamation facilities. You know, everybody's worried about water conservation. And, you know, when you were just saying that this is releasing clean water back out into the watershed, into the receding waters, or it can it be water that can be used for irrigation? You know,
it can be water that can be used for irrigation. It can be processed water. You know, part of our stream is a mineral effluent, which has the inert minerals in it, which can be separated out or it can be discharged. Part of our stream is actually a distilled. It's essentially as clean as you can get. We can reclaim some of that in our process if we want to. But you know, one of the things that you touched on just lit up a thought in my head, because one of the things that we're seeing right now is a lot of lawsuits, right? A lot of lawsuits coming up from farmers. So I think liability, in terms of the responsibility for this material as a generator, right, is a huge motivator to start looking at truly destructive technologies, right? And the alternative on some of the destructive technologies really have the potential to spread the chemicals that we're essentially trying to destroy. So one of the issues you have with incineration is it's proven that in a lot of cases it actually just spreads different PFAS species. It doesn't succeed in destroying all of the PFAS. So now you've essentially compounded the problem. So there's less and less options out there that are going to mitigate that future liability, which is ultimately going to be on the generator. Right now it's a little scary because some of it looks like it might fall on the transporter, judging by some of the articles I've read recently, where you've got guys that are doing nothing but transporting sludge, and their final destination is, let's say, land application, which is completely legal and sanctioned and essentially encouraged. And they're getting named in lawsuits from, farmers that are coming back up. I think there was a lawsuit just recently in Texas that I read an article on, where they're basically claiming that this has led to some kind of health issue, related to these forever chemicals, and they're actually suing the transport. So, the more you look at this, there needs to be a final resting place that eliminates this. And I think, if you take everything else into consideration, that's the single biggest advantage this technology has. And I think ultimately that's what will lead to bigger and bigger scaling of the technology, because it's not inherently limited. There's a process to scaling it, but you essentially can go to whatever size plant you need to go to with this as the basis, and you'd have a lot of the traditional infrastructure built in, but you'd also be eliminating some of that traditional infrastructure because you could do digested or undigested. We've got a pilot that's going to be going this year, which is actually going to be food waste, which we're optimistic about. We haven't tried it yet, so we don't know. But if we can get to that stage where we can be dealing with food waste and undigested, now you're taking a whole bunch of costs. You're taking a whole bunch of real estate out. Things start to get that much better. And I think that's where we're going to see the future where AirSCWO is concerned. I think it's just going to continue to be a bigger and bigger demand for it.
So if people are interested in getting one of these units, for lack of a better term, is this something that it's considered a CapEx or OpEx, or is it being offered as a service? There's so many different models out there now. Is it being offered as a service? Is it a try and see if this is actually going to be a fit? What is the model here? Since it's
So
fairly new technology.
we're doing a number of basically what I would call proof of concept or trials that are going to at scale facilities that will be happening this year. And I think that's where the trial phase of this ends, right? Because once it's in some high profile facilities and it's producing at scale and it's operating to specification, you're kind of past that entire stage of, okay, I need to now prove what we already know works, but we want to prove it in the environment. We want to make sure that it's robust enough. One of the reasons we've taken a conservative approach is this is going to be a piece of infrastructure. And at the end of the day, when it's deployed, we don't want service teams having to deal with it. We want something that is going to be very, very robust and very, very reliable and fit into that model of infrastructure that doesn't constantly require maintenance and things of the like. So we've been very, very conservative in our testing, in our proving, in our before we're even gone for FAT on some things, because we want to know what that life cycle is, and we want to be very comfortable underwriting that. But leading down the path of the service models, service model versus a CapEx model, currently in the state that we are as a company, we're looking at both sides of this. We're looking at providing owner-operator sort of scenario, where we will come in, install and operate the unit and tie it into your existing infrastructure. And that would be a negotiated rate based on, whether it's per gallon, per liter, per kilogram, per dry ton, whatever the medium is. And we are also looking at CapEx sales. Both of our current pilots that are going this year are both essentially headed towards CapEx.
A lot of plants are always talking about green initiatives and sustainability models or having that sustainability plant. They want to do things more for lack of a better term, quote unquote, organically. They want to eliminate chemicals. Is this something for them to take? If that is something that's on their radar, that that's a path that they want to explore or try to do more of, is this the type of technology that could help them meet those initiatives for being able to either decrease or eliminate some of their chemical or more environmentally damaging processes that they now find necessary?
Absolutely. We don't use, the only thing we use in our system on startup is a co-fuel to actually get the system up to temperature and get it into its process conditions. And then we pull in the waste that we're treating, as long as it has caloric value, which biosolids do, a bunch of other wastes, you know, whether they're petroleum derivatives or whether they're any other type, these forever plastics that we keep talking about, they all have more than enough energy in them to sustain the reaction. So what ends up happening here is it's a self-sustaining reaction that operates using the waste as fuel. There's no chemical oxidant. The air and the water are the oxidant. So you don't have any, and there's some squill processes that use peroxide. There's some squill processes that use other oxidants. In our system, we do not use anything. So the only consumable essentially in our system is the fuel that we use for startup. And we use it for a little bit of a trim so that you don't have variability in your stream. So if you're, because if you think about biosolids, right, it's not always going to be the same caloric value. It's going to range up and down a little bit, and you want the process to be very stable. So we will keep a little bit of co-fuel injected to maintain that stability so that your process temperatures are constantly the same. So you're guaranteeing the oxidation and the destruction of the product, but it's extremely environmentally friendly. It does produce, you know, carbon dioxide, which is considered the one of the lowest order of magnitude greenhouse gases. So you are going to get that because it's an oxidation reaction. But beyond that, that's what you're getting. You're getting some carbon dioxide and clean water out the other end, and you're consuming all of these other contaminants that if you were to treat them in a different way, you're either not eliminating them so that they're going to continue, or you're using a lot of toxic chemicals to eliminate them, which is, in our opinion, significantly worse.
Right, right. So it sounds to me like from what you were mentioning earlier, so it's got obviously applications for wastewater treatment, but also for industrial wastewater treatment, you know, for, you were saying pharmaceutical. We talk about that here on the show sometimes, because there are some industries where I was not aware of that in the manufacturing process, there is on-site wastewater treatment. It's, I know there was probably some at, you know, food processing, dairy for one, cheese and, you know, what is it? Beer manufacturing. So just in wrapping up, it sounds like from what you were mentioning before, and just so our audience does understand this, it obviously has applications for municipal wastewater treatment, but also some on the industrial side and, you know, big pharmaceutical, and it's all wastewater treatment. So we do talk about industrial, you know, wastewater treatment here on the show, because there are some issues that I've recently learned that come about from food processing that gives off a lot of biosolids and fat soils and grease and all kinds of issues. And so just to confirm that, yes, this technology can be used in those forms of wastewater treatment as well, but I guess they would just have to be configured slightly different for the application.
Yeah, so we can handle all different types of industrial waste as long as there is caloric value there that makes sense. Because without the fuel, you're going to expend fuel to treat, right? So that's where you lose your efficiency. So you want a stream that's going to have caloric value. The perfect stream is miscible in water, right? That's why biosolids are so good, because essentially they're carried in water. It's very easy. But you can pre-treat many different streams to be able to make them compatible. So depending on what it is, like if you're looking at the hazmat side of things, you may have to control pH, for example, on the inlet side to achieve the reaction where you want it. So there's always going to be some type of pretreatment side of this, unless you are, you know, there's certain there's a lithium battery recycling thing that actually produces almost like a perfect fuel for us, essentially, where the, it all comes out. So depending on the industrial waste, the best is when it's miscible with water. When it's not miscible with water, we pre-treat it to create stable emulsions, and then we can process it. We can even deal with certain types of solids. Like, so when you look at ion exchange or activated carbon, where they're using those to filter in many cases for either wastewater or RO water, and they're concentrating their contaminants. We have a way of actually making that processable and putting it through our system as well, and eliminating the media as well as the contaminants at the same time.
Interesting. Well, if folks want to learn more about 374 water and how these things work, and maybe discussing, a pilot or installation, how can they learn more and get a hold of you, Brad?
So I'd say the best way is through the website. It's www.374water.com. If you just put an inquiry in through the website, we've got an entire applications team that will get back to you. If somebody wants to reach me directly, they can direct it through the website as well, and I'll be happy to respond. That's probably your best and easiest way to do it. At this point, so much is done that way, right? Everything's web-based these days. And that way we get some base information, and we would have somebody from our team follow up and look at the application.
And see if it fits. All right. Well, great. Well, thank you for coming on the show today and sharing this new and, cutting edge technology. And we know with our industry, they're sometimes a little slow to adopt, but there's definitely something here. I love to bring these kind of things onto the show for people to really start taking a look at, especially if they're considering a new plant build or upgrading an existing, or things just, maybe you're open because things are working, but they're not working as efficiently as they could. Expenses are rising and you're looking for a better way to do things that don't cost you so much money. These are the types of technology that we'd like to bring onto the show, and what they're offering here at 374 Water just fits that bill completely. And so again, thank you for being on the show, Brad, and thank you, audience, for tuning in. And until next time, keep it flowing. Thanks so much for joining me, the Doo-Doo Diva, on this week's episode of Smells Like Money. What stood out to you this week? Share your takeaways by leaving me a review. You can find out more about the new technologies, creating sustainable solutions and insights on how to succeed in our vital industry by subscribing to the show. Whether you want to learn about the latest trends in wastewater infrastructure, treatment, or trenchless, you've got it all right here at Smells Like Money. If you're an industry expert and would like to be considered as a guest for the show, book a quick chat with me by visiting calendly.com/thetuitgroup/B-A-podcast-guest, or simply click the link in the show notes below. Until next week, a big shout out to all my industry friends and those who will be. You are my superheroes. Thanks for tuning in, keeping it flowing, and we'll see you all next week.